Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Potters, beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Ryan is in San Diego. I am in Milwaukee. Padres, no rest after a big weekend in Los Angeles. Head to Milwaukee tonight. Joe Musgrove against former Padre Joe Ross. Three games against Pat Murphy's really good Brewers. I mean, just took two out of three against the Orioles in Baltimore. So that'll be fun. I suppose, Ryan, and I always leave it up to you, but I suppose I know where you'd like to start today.
I would like to start with a very relevant series win by the Padres over the Dodgers. They take two of three. Tempers kind of running high in game two, and then capped off yesterday by Jurickson and Profar's bases clearing double. In what ended up being a 6-3 win for the Padres yesterday. Kevin, what did we take away from this series?
To me, it was that they beat a good team. They did enough to beat a good team. You cannot separate that it was the Dodgers, because there have been so many of these games. Like, you go back to 2013, which is kind of the place that I go back to all the time. That's when the Dodgers began their run. The Padres actually swept them in L.A., their first series against each other that year, I believe. But even counting that three-game sweep, there's been, I think, 100 games in the Padres at Dodger Stadium in that span, and the Padres have won 32 of them. So not good. So it's you watch these games and you go, we've been here before. You watch that game in Korea. We talked about it. Padres never trailed, but the Dodgers kept battling back. And if you have watched the Padres for any number of years, you could not be blamed to say, they're going to lose this one. They won. Friday night, they're down. They're down by four still in the sixth, by three, I believe, in the seventh. And they end up winning in 11 innings by battling back in the seventh to tie it. Another dramatic Tatis home run. The rookie, Jurickson, or I'm sorry, get a little high on Jurickson, I guess. Jackson Merrill gets the game-winning hit in the 11th. Okay, so they lose on Saturday. Look, I just got to say it, and I wrote it that night, you know, they still got the tying run on. And is that matter when they're losing every game? No. But they had the tying run, I'm sorry, at the plate in the ninth inning in the loss on Saturday, because that's what it seems like they do now. Anyway, go to Sunday, another game where you would say, oh, this is a game they lose to the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers tied it up. The Dodgers took the lead. The Dodgers got the big hits, right? Mm-hmm. Padres win. We're 18 games in. They're 9-9. To me, how the Padres are doing things is what matters.
Yeah, I agree. Jurickson Profar, we talk about him a lot on this podcast because he started the season so hot. He factored into a couple of different incidents over the weekend. Nice to see things getting chippy, by the way. Two teams that don't really talk about being rivals sure acted like rivals this weekend. Start with Saturday. Padres are getting perfect gamed when Jurickson Profar comes to the plate and squares to bunt. Go ahead. Take me through it, Kevin.
Jurickson is two things. Mm-hmm. Very smart about baseball and very passionate. Mm-hmm. And passion won in that moment. Yeah. Because I'll be honest with you, I couldn't figure out what he was doing. Right. And it turned out he was upset. He thought that Gavin Stone was upset because Jurickson had squared to bunt on the pitch before.
Right.
It was a one-run game, and Gavin Stone had a no-hitter going, and he was going to try to hit Jurickson. It made zero sense. So that's where you see the Dodgers' point of view, and they were like, you know, like, I know I make a lot of faces, right? Like, I don't hide my emotions well. That's what the Dodgers were like. Right. Well, they were like, what the heck? Dude, that makes no sense. You can't blame them for that, right? Mm-hmm. And Jurickson acknowledged it. You know, he said, yeah, that's what I thought. And then I realized that's not what he's doing. Hey, by that point, like, things are already going, right? And it was one of those silly, it wasn't as good as Clayton Kershaw yelling across the diamond at Jurickson Profar. It wasn't as good as, I think, what was it? Jorge Mateo got hit by a pitch or something like 4 years ago. They had some stuff. Trent Grisham staring at the dugout. Like, it wasn't as good as like a September.
Right. This isn't Carlos Quentin versus Zach Greinke. That level.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't as good, though. I was just going with Dodger once. But yes, I it wasn't a hallway altercation. But yeah, those are always cool. And you can tell by how the internet reacts and how news outlets react. It was not newsworthy, but benches clearing is always newsworthy. There was not a punch thrown. People were smiling and laughing. Right. You know, people were walking. Whatever. good for everyone involved. Jerickson Profar turns out to, you know, the Padres obviously got wind of Will Smith, the catcher, who was the person that got into it with on Saturday a little bit. After the game, he told their flagship radio station that why would we throw at Jerickson Profar? He's irrelevant.
Right.
Meaning, I assume, he's not the guy you're watching out for in the lineup per se. Interesting in that he's been their MVP so far.
Right. And there's a way to say that without saying the word irrelevant, right? It's Will Smith could have said, he's not the guy you worry about beating you, but that's not what he said.
Yes. And, yeah. And that's why words matter. I'm sorry. I believe yesterday I wrote 5,000 words.
Wow.
I'm not proud of all of them. I'm paid to write. I don't get it correct all the time. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time holding against players willing to speak publicly
Right. Their
choice of words. That said, you are absolutely correct. It is a harsh word.
And this is, unfortunately, Kevin, when you talk about the internet and you talk about some other things, and we won't go down this rabbit hole very deep, but you know, when you expect players to be honest or you expect players to be unfiltered, you can't then turn around and kill them when they're honest and unfiltered.
That's
the way the world is. Yes.
I try to be honest about it. Like we just were, I'm not scoffing at Will Smith. He actually had some points.
Right.
And the Padres would acknowledge that. And the Padres respect Will Smith. I'm also going to say, yeah, that word was incendiary.
Yeah.
But the media does it and it drives me crazy because we should be more responsible than that about, you know, jumping on a guy who talks. Mm-hmm. And I will say, and I've had these conversations with players and, you know, others, fans do it. Mm-hmm. And it has affected how honest, how forthcoming players are.
Right.
So, you know, we all could look in the mirror. We won't. So let's move on.
Smash cut to Sunday night. Bases loaded, tie game, correct? Jerickson Profar at the plate hits a ball that he believes is very gone. We know he thought it was very gone because by the time it hit the top of the center field wall, he was about halfway to right. Clears the bases, is lifted for a pinch runner immediately. That pin, correct? And then that pinch runner gets thrown out trying to steal third.
Right.
Right. Many years against a team like these Dodgers, you would be talking about that being a turning point in the game. And yet, because of the way the Padres were able to finish with their bullpen, it was not. Fair?
Absolutely fair. Sorry, I was shaking my head because I got a few emails that Jerickson was pulled because he didn't hustle.
No.
That was the 13th time that Jose Azokar has replaced Jerickson Profar. So that was not it. That doesn't mean that, I guess, you know, that Jerickson possibly was maybe talked to today or will be today, like, hey, you know, next time. But he crushed that freaking ball.
Yeah. I thought off the bat was gone.
I could look it up right now, and I should have. That might be a home run in 29 of 30 parks.
Yeah. I mean, off the bat, I thought it was gone.
27 of 30, something like that.
Yeah. Kevin, you wrote something in your Padres Daily that I thought was super interesting because I didn't really see it reported anywhere else. And anytime the Padres and Dodgers are jawing at each other, it is inherently interesting. Dave Roberts, when you're talking about gamesmanship and the Dodgers, and I think you said something like, you know, Dave Roberts knows all about gamesmanship. Before Friday's opener, he pulled the umpiring crew aside and said, keep an eye on where Manny Machado warms up. Correct? Mm-hmm. Where he takes his practice swings?
He's way off the on-deck circle.
Right.
He's practically a part of the whole family there, the catcher, the umpire, and the batter.
Right. And then in Manny Machado's first at-bat Friday, he crushes a ball and appears to have directed at least some sort of a glare at the Dodgers dugout as he does it. Does this happen a lot? Kevin, I was so intrigued by that. I was going to ask you about it yesterday, but you were so busy. Like, is this something that happens a lot or is this unique to Padres Dodgers?
No, it happens a lot for sure. And, you know, you pick and choose when you do it. And the reason that I use that line about gamesmanship is that, that Dave Roberts wondered aloud whether Jerickson was using gamesmanship. Right?
Right.
It's like, okay, yeah, cool. And you know, the Dodgers didn't say anything. Manny didn't move the rest of the series. He was in his normal place. Mm-hmm. He ended up coming up quite a bit as the leadoff hitter in an inning because Jake got out a few more times than usual this series, but with the double plays. but the Dodgers didn't say anything after he hit a home run.
Right.
And the umpires obviously weren't bothered by it. And a lot of players do it. Manny might creep a little closer. It's a little, it goes on far more than a lot of us know. There's always something, some jawing, maybe it's during a game, before a game, there's a lot of stuff.
Sure. Manny Machado is heating up, a couple home runs in this series, appears, I mean, even his outs seem to be hit hard. What's different? Is this just a matter of him rounding into shape? Is this something else?
You know, I think it is. I think he's thinking too much, which you do when you're the designated hitter. That's probably an underrated part of I'd written about the DH and that being a thing. Didn't want to – Manny doesn't make excuses. I didn't want to make it seem like I was. But I think that's a part of it. Rounding into shape is probably a good word for it. He's getting to take some more grounders and work out at third. Maybe he's feeling more like a ball player, which he said he looks forward to doing. I mean, that's a guy who played more games than anyone in the majors from 2015 through, you know, until what, midway through last year, at a position, not a, you know, DH. He played at a position, and that's what he's accustomed to doing. But yeah, he's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball in the air. He's hitting the ball all over the park. And he is hitting pitches well that he should hit well. Last year, if you looked, pitches in the heart of the zone, I'm not talking like dead center, but clearly in the zone, he was way down. His batting average, his slugging percentage, he was not doing damage on those pitches. He was maybe the best in the league in 2022 at that. And in my mind, he was, it was the MVP that year. So, and he's certainly the MVP of the Padres. So, there are certain things that when the greats are on that they're doing, and Manny, those things are happening right now. With Manny, often it didn't happen last year. Now he was hurt. When it starts, it goes for a while, like a month or two, like when it starts. Then there'll be another cold stretch, and then it'll, you know, whatever.
Well, and when he goes on a heater, I mean, there are a few players in baseball better, right? Yeah. I mean,
like every time he's up, it's like, okay.
Right. It's appointment television. So
yeah, it's going to be a single, a hard 110 mile an hour single at least, or something like that. And then there's going to be, you know, three home runs in five games or something.
Sure. And the way you can tell, Kevin, I mean, when we're just looking at peripheral stuff, is him crushing pitches that are in the zone, essentially.
Well, that he should. He's not missing those pitches. And look, that's easier said than done. But it sounds obvious. But look, Manny sometimes does. He'll just go and they'll be fouled back. And, you know, That's when you know, Toddy's off when he's swinging at bad pitches. You know, Manny's off. He does a little chase too, but when he's missing pitches that are right there.
Sure. Padres, Brewers are one of those teams, Kevin. I think that, you know, we look at them and it seems like they're in the headlines for trading guys away a little bit like the Rays of the National League. But my goodness, they're always right there. And they're always either in the playoffs or chasing for a playoff spot. Pat Murphy in his first year managing them. We'll get back to him here in a minute. What do you think has made the Brewers so good so far? And what do we expect from the brother of former Padre Tyson Ross, Joe Ross?
Well, they're somehow piecing together pitching. They had some injuries, though. Wade Miley's back. They obviously traded away Corbin Burns, correct? You're going to have to help me out this morning. I'm a little slow. But Joe Ross had a real nice start, got his first win in what, five seasons or something? Mm-hmm. And Joe Ross, as many people know, was part of the, whether you want to call it the Trey Turner trade or the Will Myers trade, Joe Ross was a part of that, sent to the Nationals by the Padres in 2014.
Okay. That's right.
Yes.
Yes. So yes.
This
yes.
is big. Like this is big for Joe Ross. He's had elbow issues big time. You would have been surprised to see that Joe Ross was in the major still. No one could blame you. I think it's a real good story. He's going against Joe Musgrove tonight. Look, the fact is Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish have had one good start. Mm-hmm. And they need to be, you know, they need to be better. Christian Yelich was going good for the Brewers, but now I think we'll find out today. He has not been put on the IL, but they did call up an outfielder, but he could be put on the IL. They've got like decent hitters. And like you said, they keep, obviously, they have Jackson Churio, the youngest player in the major leagues. You know, remember Jackson Merrill in the Padres' early opening day was the youngest player in the major leagues. Now he's the third youngest. Jackson Churio is like 35 days past his 20th birthday. So he's a lot younger than Jackson Merrill. He's about to turn 21 on Friday. They've got some good players, some good, decent, like, you know, if you follow baseball, some players that you, oh, I recognize that name. I recognize that name. And somehow they make a team, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, now Wilson Contreras' brother is on this team. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, you know, William gets a little bit of Wilson's Padres power. Because Wilson crushes the Padres. Like I said, they've got some good players. They're not the Dodgers or the Padres or the Phillies, but they're tough.
Yeah, yeah. They remind me a little bit, Kevin, of kind of a mid-major basketball team that gets into the tournament every year, right? I don't know if they hang Final Four banners in Milwaukee, but they do a really good job of getting to the tournament.
Credit to them, because it's sort of the anti-Peter Seidler, yes, philosophy to some extent, right? Mm-hmm. But guess what? It's what most teams would and do, mm-hmm, you know? If they, you know, there's people in the Padres that would do it that way because it might be a smarter business decision.
Right. No, that's a great point. That's a great point.
Now, I think, yeah, maybe it's not, because then the Padres wouldn't be getting 3.2 million people to, you know, but look, what did the Brewers do? The Brewers locked up Jackson Churio to an $80-something million contract before he played in the major leagues. Their understanding too, right? Like they locked up Ryan Braun. They had locked up Christian Yelich. Their understanding that the reason the Rays, for all that success, don't get fans is that everybody's gone after 3 years.
Right.
The Brewers are always going to do that a little bit, but they obviously also try to keep some people there whose jersey you buy, who you can be confident will be there for a while.
Sure. I would argue back, Kevin, that if Christian Yelich had been Christian Yelich the last couple of years, maybe he wouldn't still be a Brewer. This is a guy who makes a lot of money, would have been a primary trade target, but is certainly somebody who, right, he is Mr. Brewer. I mean, he's, yeah, my guess is the longest tenured starter on that team.
That's the brilliant thing about the Churio contract is, yeah, there is zero reason to trade him.
None.
He's making about as much as Will Myers was back, you know, in like 2015,
right,
basically over the life of that contract.
That's, wow, that's crazy. One key, I think, to beating the Brewers, Kevin, if you're the Padres here, is you want to get to their bullpen. They have a bullpen ERA of 7.5.
Yeah, I don't know how they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 15th in the National League. To me, that's, you know, I can't imagine Joe Ross and or Wade Miley are built to go 7-8 innings. If you could get into the Brewers bullpen, I think you have a chance. And then Thursday, it's a TBA starter, if I recall.
Yeah, because you just said that Joe Ross will go 7 tonight. that's what always works when I go, gosh, who is this guy on the mound? And like, what's going on? And yeah, he's, you know, he's limited. And then boom, boom, boom. And especially, look, the Padres got in at 3, right? Mm-hmm. Big emotional weekend, right? Like, I think so. You know, I don't want to call it a big game. I don't want to call it a prove it game, but. They're going to need to respond tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Joe Ross did go 6 1/3 against the Reds in his last start for that victory. What happened is his slider has always been good. And he didn't walk people. I think in his first start, like he threw 87 pitches in like 3 innings or something because he walked a lot of people.
Right.
So I'm big. I want to see what Joe Musgrove does tonight. Like I said, this guy's super, super important to the Padres, and he and you have not found their stride yet. And there are some things. I don't know of anything that's wrong with either one of them. Both of them down with the velocity a little bit. I know sometimes you is throttled back because he's been throwing a lot of pitches. But, you know, just you, Darvish, and Joe Musgrove, a couple guys to keep an eye on if you're interested in what the Padres do, because they're important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Kevin, what do you remember about Pat Murphy during his very brief time with the Padres? Obviously, I know of him. He was the head coach at ASU when I was living in that state, managed the AAA Tucson Padres when I was living in that city, covering some games. What do you know about Pat Murphy? Because he's an interesting cat.
I remember him more too for Arizona State. Covered a couple regionals that he was you would say legendary coach of the Sun Devils, right? Mm-hmm. And has he coached a lot of players who were in the major leagues, and, you know, he coached Craig Counsell. Pat has always been a kind and to me, interesting guy to, you know, talk to. His son plays for the Padres in the minor leagues, is friends with Jackson Merrill. You know, so I know that Jackson was looking forward to that. He's probably looking forward to that more than Jackson Chirio. He seemed completely unaffected by, you know, he's already met Jackson Chirio. Okay, fine. You know, Jackson Merrill is all about the Padres and doing well, though. He's also a big baseball fan guy, which I thought maybe that's why he'd be more interested in the Jackson Chirio thing. But yeah, anyway, maybe I'll try him again today. Yeah, Pat Murphy finally gets his shot. Probably wasn't going to get it anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Got it here, and so far, what are they, 10-4? Mm-hmm. So I think he's a good baseball man.
Right. It's funny. You know, there are so many paths to the big leagues, whether you're a player or a coach. But even by that standard, the way Pat Murphy got to the top step of the Brewers dugout is, I think, unique within baseball. Right. This is a guy who spent his entire adult life as a college coach. Essentially, NCAA sanctions force him into the pro rank. He then kills it as a Padres minor league manager. There was a portion of the Padres front office that really wanted to give him a shot as the Padres manager, right? That was post-Andy Green, or is that post-Buddy Black?
That was post-Buddy Black.
Post-Buddy Black, pre-Andy Green.
Yes.
Right? Right. Gets there, latches back on with Counsell, who was his former star player at Notre Dame. Counsell leaves in one of the, I think, probably most outwardly shocking moves in managerial history. And that leaves him there. I mean, to me, that's just such an interesting path to the big.
It is. You could say almost more interesting than Mike Schilt, who at least was in professional baseball. Yeah. Now, Mike Schilt's a very rare path as well. But being outside of professional baseball, his connections to better professional baseball were deep. Like I said, based on how the Cardinals sort of guerrilla warfared Mike Schilt, he might not have gotten another job if not the Padres won. And Pat Murphy probably wasn't getting another manager's job if not the Brewers won. And, you know, guess what? Like, a lot of successful people were overlooked and, you know, somehow just got a job. And then suddenly the world knows about him, and a bunch of people passed on him. So I think these are two really good baseball guys.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, again, we talk about, you know, how hard it is to be one of the, you know, there's just a few dozen managers in Major League Baseball, and what a hard job that is to get. But then when you get it, you've got it, right? I mean, Pat Murphy, this is a strange path until you become the guy, and then you're the guy. So
and I'll tell you about it, and I won't use names, but it's a hard job, man. Mm-hmm. And guys will leave it, and they'll talk about the stress relief, and suddenly you see them. They look healthier. They have more time for themselves, for their family, for coaching, for actually getting, you know, into what they really, why they started in the business. Right. And you ask them, you wouldn't manage? Are you kidding me? Of course I would. There's only 30 of those jobs. So, you know, you'd run right back into that fire because only 30 guys are allowed to, you know, destroy their bodies and their minds like that. The privilege of doing that.
Sounds a little bit like our business, Kevin. Just a little bit. Except for the destroying your bodies part. But outside of that. Kevin, I like putting you on the spot, but you're tired. So I'm going to just tee you up here. Give me your all-time hell travel story. Because today's not a good one. Yeah,
this is pretty close. I'm not going to be good at that because I block them out.
Okay.
I block them out because, like, I was thinking about that earlier today. Usually when you come to Milwaukee and you're going two time zones, the Padres get a day off before that, right? So I go the red eye. I work right through the red eye. My email lands in people's mailbox at 6 a.m. And I pressed send from my plane at 5:55 Pacific time this morning. I did, you know, I haven't got much sleep at all. If I dwell on that, I'm going to get out of this business. it's a reality. I call it romanticizing, right? Like, I focus on the good parts, right? Like, just like with certain players, right? Like, I focus on the good conversations. I focus on watching them play and how much I appreciate their athletic prowess. And if they happen to maybe have some bad moments with me, I just don't, I just don't really think about it because I don't want to, you know? So I have some travel nightmare stories. Anyone who's been in this business does. It is what it is. That's funny that you ask. I'm laughing because I was just thinking about it an hour ago. Is like, I'm not even going to remember this by August because there will be two more like this. And I don't want to get bogged down. But this is an all-timer. And I like, again, maybe once a year this happens to the Padres because no one cares about me really except you. Thank you, Ryan. Where yes, they get into places late. It happens. But where you're going from the West Coast to Milwaukee and you had a ESPN game, a rain out or a rain delay, right. Fortunately, only 36 minutes for them. But you end up, you know, having to take off later when normally you'd have a 1 p.m. game. This, like I said earlier, this will be a little test for him today.
Gosh, Kevin, how will you get right? Is it simply sleep? Is it caffeine? What is it?
Oh, it's caffeine.
Workout? It's caffeine. Okay.
Oh, it's caffeine. And so I've had a series. I had an hour nap on the plane, my connection, and about a 45-minute nap here. The key is to not get down. I have to keep going like this till whatever it is, 2-3 in the morning tomorrow. And then you catch up. You know what sucks about sleep, Ryan? Have you ever thought about this? You could get 16 hours of sleep on Monday night. If you then on Tuesday only get 4 hours, you haven't gotten 20 hours of sleep over two. You don't get to average it. You don't get to store sleep.
Right.
You just got 4 hours of sleep on Tuesday and now you're tired on Wednesday. Yeah. You're like, wait a minute, just 2 days ago, I got 16 hours of sleep. I was feeling great.
Right.
Can't store sleep.
Can't store sleep. I like that. That's a good place to stop, I think. Kevin?
I think about it all the time.
Yes. Padres Brewers 3-game series, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in Milwaukee. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. I'm Kevin Acey. I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.